to The Outcast, the podcast that is giving a voice to anyone who has ever felt like an outsider or an outcast. I want this to be a safe haven, a place of sharing and learning and healing. I'm so excited to kick off season two of The Outcast, and I'm very grateful to my first guest for being here to help me start season two, the mayor of Charlottesville, Virginia, Nakia Walker. Mayor, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
This is a busy time for you. I've seen you everywhere. I've seen you on all of the talk shows, and we appreciate you taking some time to spend with us here in Fredericksburg.
Oh, no problem. I like your intro. That's why I called back.
I appreciate that very much. You know, I truly believe that, and we have shed some light on some very, very intense conversations on this podcast, and I really hope that continues. And, you know, going into this, I thought to myself, you know, as our hearts have been with Charlottesville for a long time now, and here we are a year later, but if anyone can attest to a lot can happen in a year, I think it's you guys.
Oh, yes, definitely. It's been a very, very busy year, and most of it has been kind of, you know, soul-searching, trying to figure out what's next. And so, you know, the year anniversary, which I don't even like to say, but that has now arrived. And we were still in the middle of that soul searching process.
The Outcast podcast is supported by Richmond to DC HelpWanted.com. Most folks who work here love living here, and that makes a difference. At Richmond to DC HelpWanted.com, they're proud to work the hometown advantage around the clock, connecting local employers to local job seekers. Richmond to DC HelpWanted.com makes it easy to post a job, and it's local, so you won't get spammed by faraway job seekers. And if you're looking for a good local job, search jobs and apply online right now. Get the advantage of finding a job close to home at Richmond to DC HelpWanted.com. Local jobs that work.
I love that you use those words, Mayor, soul searching process. I mean, that's truly what it is. And I love that you were born and raised in Charlottesville. I was born and raised in Richmond. So we're both Virginia girls. I think that gives us a little right to have a real honest chat here about the problems we have had in this state and that we continue to have in this state. Racial issues have been rampant. They have been in other places, not just Charlottesville, for a long time.
Yes. And that's one of the things, you know, unfortunately, you know, people were injured last year. A mother lost her daughter, you know, to state police officers. They, you know, their families lost them. But what it did, it pushed us into a space where we could force honest conversations. And before that point, if you weren't comfortable with forcing people into conversations that they would, you know, more likely than not choose to leave after being forced into it, the conversation just didn't happen. So we are a city that, you know, a lot of people who claim that they were well-intentioned, they've just been, you know, facilitating this illusion and much more dangerous than any of the, you know, the organizers or the rallies or anybody who marched in our streets. The policies that they've been able to, you know, implement and the abuse of their power for a lot of them, it's been devastating to families for so many generations. And now you can have an honest conversation about what, you know, being in position of power looks like and what abusing that power looks like. And there are more than a few people in the room at every time that conversation is being had that wants to have it, right? And they're pushing their families and their social circles. And some people, of course, are choosing to, you know, to remain blissfully ignorant, which isn't possible.
Right.
So they are very uncomfortable.
Exactly.
But, I mean, historically, we know that we've been in these moments before, and we know what those television images did during the civil rights movement. So we know how quickly we can exit this moment without really getting anything lasting done. And we know that our kids our grandchildren can have these same conversations, you know, 50 years from now. So it's important for us to acknowledge, you know, where we've been in the past and also acknowledge how much work we have to do, and then make that commitment that no matter what or no matter who would like it to stay the same, that we're going to commit to it.
I feel like the rally last year, Mayor, really ripped off a Band-Aid that has been trying to come off, obviously, for a long time. But these are the kinds of things, unfortunate, as horribly unfortunate as they are, that do rip off these Band-Aids and make you have these conversations, not mm-hmm. just in Charlottesville, but you have kids. And the biggest question that I heard around all of this, not only, you know, when it first happened, but it's a question we keep coming back to. How do you talk Charlottesville and what happened in Charlottesville with your kids? It's not just Charlottesville, but how do you handle these racial involved conversations that you know we need to have? What do you say to your kids? You know, how was it in your household? What was your conversation like?
Well, what I'll say is that I don't think there's a Band-Aid that's being ripped off. I feel like we've been a festering, oozing sore that some people acknowledge and a lot of people didn't. So nobody took the time to really put a Band-Aid on it. So that's what I feel about my time and my life here. As far as my house, we're a little different. I would never set my kids up not to have accurate information. Mm-hmm. So, our dinner table conversations are about making sure that their eyes are open, making sure that they are aware of the past, and, that they are deciding what their future looks like, and to be able to, spot a roadblock before it hits them.
Mm, yes.
Right. So that's what we do in my house. And so my kids are very aware of, race relations in the country. They, even more importantly than that, they know that they come from a continent full of black people, amazing black people who created some of the who almost everything can be found on the continent of Africa. So my kids have that very holistic perspective that we're still trying to study, because again, Africa hasn't been studied in that light as much across the globe, because for the most part the colonial powers, didn't want that to happen. But my kids are introduced to as much information as I can about Africa and the Americas and the role here. So it's never a point, at least not by any fault of mine, that they would be able to live in this country with blinders on. And it's different.
Yeah.
I've had they are friends, especially my youngest, say this is a bit intense. If I have a problem at the schools with my kids, I would take my kids with me to school board meetings to talk to the administrators, not to embarrass anyone or whatever, but to teach them how to advocate for themselves.
Right, an honest conversation, out in the open, yeah.
Yeah, so that's important. We have to make sure that our kids know the information. They know they matter, that their only information about, black people are not, the news and being constantly bombarded with all the negatives, of it.
Right.
And the lies that we've been told. So that's one of the way out of this, is to make sure that we have the information.
We're talking to the mayor of Charlottesville, Nakia Walker, for the season opener here of season 2 on the podcast. I'm very excited to have her on the show. And I was telling you earlier, Nakia, that I grew up in Richmond, and we have been no strangers to issues and things that we need to be talking about in this state. And I remember growing up and facing a lot of racial injustice, a lot of homophobia, a lot of those things going on. And then, Richmond grew a bit and we started to get more diverse. And then I moved to Fredericksburg 10 years ago. And once again, you're facing some small town issues. Charlottesville has seen a lot of that, too, even though if you're a just an often visitor to Charlottesville, you might look at it from the outside and say, it is a very diverse place. It's a beautiful place. And there's a lot of colors and a lot of different people. And there's a lot of wonderful things going on. But also underneath, there is a conversation to be had.
You know, Charlottesville is one of those places that, I mean, I get why we're in the books as the top and then pick one destination, travel right. destination, place to go school, raise a family, retire, whatever. You know, we are on the list. But that's only for certain people. You know, that's it's based on race and class.
Mm-hmm.
So this, you know, my campaign slogan was unmasking the illusion. The illusion that everyone can live here and everyone can thrive is that. It's an illusion, right?
Yeah.
It's not a fact. And so you have large percentage of, you know, the population that are not doing well, that are not even in a space daily where they can even see the physical beauty of the place, much less experience all the richness and resources, you know, that we have, because they don't have access to it.
Right.
So that's important, I think, for people to remember. And one of our major battles during this time has been, you know, people who want their lives to return to normal.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep telling them there are so many people who the normal for them, they don't want that. They never wanted it, and they deserve better, right? And acknowledging white supremacy and privilege and what that means overall in Charlottesville and across the globe is one of the things that we are able to now force because of the incident last summer,
mm-hmm.
you know, because of, you know, the summer of hate here.
That phrase, the summer of hate. I mean, it's
yeah.
so true, and it really does hit you right in the heart. But I tell
yeah.
you, I mean, the images that we saw from Charlottesville, the faces of the hate, the anger and the rage that was seen in those faces just, I mean, scared me to death just
yeah.
to even look at it on the television. I can only imagine what you were feeling mm-hmm. as you led up to those events and that day.
What we have to acknowledge about that day is that people did come in from the outside, but you had two UVA alum who
right.
decided to call people to the town that they were very comfortable in. One was still living in.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the myth of the outsiders is one of the truths that we need to tell. Then we need to talk about who were those faces. They were white male Americans. So that's the second thing. You know, this attempting to detach by calling them, you know, neo-Nazis, you know, they're not even in at this point, that is immediate link to another, you know, another place that's not
right.
in America.
Right.
And that it's, again, a way for us to not claim.
Right. It's not true.
And own the fact that this is what America has produced.
That's right.
This is what Charlottesville, Virginia has produced.
Right.
This is what the University of Virginia has produced. And you have to clean up your own house. And separating yourself, distancing yourself to make yourself comfortable and more, and you know, in shaping that narrative so that you don't have to face your truth, we're not going to get anywhere. We're going to be in the same space we were last year and this year and in, you know, 50 years.
Right.
So, again, if we want to keep repeating this cycle or if we actually want to undo basically the foundations of this country and teach people accurate history and then move forward, that is something that, you know, that is where the soul searching is happening, because it involves people being honest about the lies they've been told. So there's no inferior to you. Right?
Right.
And so once you start saying that, those statues mean something because the symbolism of the statues, and that you define yourself based on the lies that you've been told that white equals supreme. So that is a very hard conversation. Imagine a white mother or father having to sit with their high school students, because by then they've learned this well, their college student who who are not, because the younger kids are doing much better than us, but, you know, these lies, they stick and stay, mm-hmm. And try to undo some of that ugliness that has been taught since the creation of this country. That's hard work.
Oh, yeah.
That's tough. That's, you know, that's intense, and you have to be intentional, and you have to make sure you have the right information if you never received it, so that you won't be sugarcoating anything for your kids to help them unlearn.
Yeah, you're talking about undo and redo. And yeah, there's a lot of that's a huge conversation that takes a long time. I want to talk about you brought up these guys being alum of UVA. And I want to talk about this. I mean, obviously, we were all on pins and needles when these guys were trying to get a permit to do this again in Charlottesville. I mean, my stomach just in knots. I can only imagine the mood there was like 50 times worse.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't get the permit.
Well, you know, the application was actually withdrawn in court by the applicant. So that's one of the things that's producing some of the uncertainty we have, because we don't know. I mean, the judge didn't make a decision. You know, the applicant withdrew, and we would actually know whether or not something was happening here, and we're kind of just kind of waiting to see
right.
who shows up and how many, and that's that'll have you in knots. That uncertainty.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And
yeah.
and you know, you brought up the statues. Listen, this, we heard a lot about the statue conversation, and we've had the statue conversation here. We had it in Richmond. We're having statue conversation. What's
everywhere.
Frustrating is this wasn't just about the statues.
No.
And what's also frustrating is the statues are still there.
Yes. So, no, it's not just about the statues. I mean, you're talking about symbolism.
Yeah.
And I tell people when I'm talking to them, anyone in here who's Christian understands the power of symbolism.
Mm-hmm.
You know exactly what you're looking at. Your faith is tapped into when you see a cross, right?
Right.
And so that is what these symbols mean. These statues were put in place to tell a story. Without words, they were put in place so people could see white and greatness and always be able to tell that story, even if it was on a subconscious level. And that is that's how deep this is, because you're people who orchestrated this are aware of what happened, but people who didn't are just like, it's just a statue. And no, it's not just.
Right.
Just a statue, because just a statue wouldn't have had thousands of people here with, white men ready to either give their life or take a life to preserve it.
Or torch down the city. I mean, they had torches, yeah. For goodness sakes. You know, it's obviously that screamed, it's not just about the statue.
And the fear there, you will not replace us. Who's trying to replace you?
Yeah.
Right? How is that possible?
Right.
And it's the same kind of, it's the same discussions that, you know, we have when people are talking about, like, all lives matter versus Black Lives Matter. Well, you've never had to say all lives matter because, one, you've only been concerned about your life, and, two, it's been clear that your life matters, so you didn't need a slogan to chant for
people
to remember it and fight for it if you were white and American. You've always had that privilege, even white and immigrant, able to, you know, be accepted into society as an original member. Like, whatever route you have been on, you have been able to blend into this society, and you have been able to create this this story based on excluding or abusing or dehumanizing others.
Yes, that's absolute truth. And if you just look at the numbers, let's even just take it to if you were to somehow take the emotion out of it, you look at the numbers, the poverty numbers, the numbers involving incarceration. I mean, that in itself shows where the conversation should be, what the category should be.
And even when you're talking about something like incarceration, you if you don't know your history, then you will just stay. I mean, if you don't commit crimes, you won't go to prison.
Yeah.
But once you know your history and that these systems popped up as an extension of, you know, slavery, and that every decade since then, it has transformed itself in a way to make sure that you could legally shackle and chain people. That you have to know your history to be able to put it together.
So very true. We're talking to Charlottesville Mayor Nakia Walker, and I'm just ignited in my own heart regarding her passion, and I love it, and I've loved it all throughout since you've been elected, Nakia. Now let's talk about your election a little bit. You were elected November of last year, obviously just a short time after all of this, but you started your campaign obviously before the rally, and you know, you talked about your campaign slogan. How did this moment in history shift what you were doing with your campaign?
It didn't really shift anything. I'm a pretty, you know, direct person. I launched my campaign in March. I think it was March 14th of 2017. And my campaign slogan was Unmasking the Illusion. My campaign colors were red, black, and green. And I didn't change anything that I normally do, except talk to a lot more people than I ever wanted to talk to.
Yes,
and
I'm sure.
so that was it. I mean, I ended up in this space because my good friend Dr. Holly Edwards passed away, and she had been encouraging me to take a chance at running for council and, you know, look at it seriously, and I had not. And then when she passed away, you know, when you're trying to figure out how to honor someone's legacy who was planning a dinner for some of our men and women and families who are homeless, just a short week or less than 2 weeks before she passed away, you know, you have to do the type of work that she did.
You knew it in your heart. It felt like a calling.
Honoring her legacy matter, right?
Yeah.
And so that's why I decided. So I contemplated and prepared, and I contemplated up to the day that I announced. So once I made it official, that's when I stopped. You know, I moved from contemplation phase. But it was difficult because, you know, I've been on the other end of social justice advocacy and I like it. I can, you know, there are fewer rules. I do what I want. I don't have to worry about what people think about what I say or what I do. And I don't have to necessarily spend a lot of time talking to people who are only in the room to cause, you know, to create a chaotic situation. So that has changed. But I thought that I would spend the year, you know, making the debates very interesting, right? And what became obviously almost immediately that people weren't used to the kind of, you know, authentic conversations that I have with people. And so anytime I, you know, arrived in a room and had conversation with people, they were, you know, they were paying attention. They were listening.
Oh, I bet. I bet they were.
And whether they were listening to try to figure out if there were any alternative facts involved or whether they were listening because they genuinely wanted to figure out how to help change things or, you know, somewhere in between that, they were paying attention. So I had a base of supporters every time I walked into and out of a room.
And that's one thing that I'm so intrigued by, and I love that you're doing. You were an advocate before you became mayor. You were involved in social injustice conversation well before that. And now that you are, you're not trying to sugarcoat any of it. You're not trying to follow anybody else's rules. And I think that's something that all cities can look at and look at what you're doing there and see, okay, how can we also do that and have that really honest conversation?
And I think it, you know, you have to have more people at the table who are willing. I've always been this way, so I don't know how to do anything different, and I don't wait for people to give me permission to do things. So I encourage people to, and especially women, stop waiting, you know, for people to give you permission. Own your space, own your power, And, you know, the naysayers will be there. You know, people will, you know, ridicule you. They'll spend their energy attempting to destroy you. But if you own your space and own your power, it can't happen. And so that's one of the things that's really different. I've never, you know, waited
right.
for people to tell me it was okay. So in this time that we're in, I was talking about race relations in this community long before it became the popular thing to do.
Right.
And if it stopped tomorrow because people were tired of hearing it, it's been a year, we're done, I know nothing has been fixed, but we're done, I'm going to continue.
Mm-hmm.
As long as I'm in the room, this is what we're talking about until we don't have to. And the only way we're not going to have to is that if you fix it. So we can't, you know, we have some major disparities in health, wealth, education. I mean, you're looking at an asset and wealth at, you know, a little over 9,000 for Black families, 12,000 for Hispanic families, 130,000 for white families.
Right.
That's major. We have an area median income that is $89,600 as of April 2018 data. Last year, you know, we spent a year in the soul searching, but our area median income was $76,600.
Mm-hmm.
So a $13,000 increase in this year that we've been trying to figure out race and whether we want to have an authentic, you know, conversation. We are still, people incomes are still growing at a rate that our area, the median income is $89,000. There are families who are earning $10,000 a year being paid minimum wage, you know, and expected to take care of, you know, families on that.
Which is unbelievable, yeah.
Yeah, neither the city nor the university pays, which are the two largest employers mm-hmm. in the city, pay a living wage. And, you know, I've been advocating for a living wage for 3 years now, and we're moving towards it, but we're not there. And those are the type of things when you talk about all people, you know, are valued. I saw our former city manager and even the interim city manager advocate for things for themselves. I have never seen them fight for their employees at any level. We have major, even within our workforce, we have major, you know, gender discriminatory practices, and we have a large temporary employee workforce that's not truly temporary. I mean, I know people who worked in the city as a temporary employee, including myself, for years. So it's important for people to know that the spaces we find ourselves in are not by accident.
Yes.
They are very intentional. And when you see and you have people at the table that are facilitating the illusion, you call them out. So that's what I'm encouraging. People listening, make sure that when you have people in the room with you facilitating the illusion, that you are not allowing it.
I love that. I love your honesty about it. I really do. And I know that there are people that will be hearing this everywhere. But I know, you know, people in towns, especially like Fredericksburg, like Charlottesville, that are struggling to see things move forward. And this can be a slow process. This can take longer than you want it to, and painfully long, as you know. What advice do you give people in their town as they are trying to make these moves happen, make forward motion happen?
So change can take time. But we know that when people are committed and devoted to it, that it can happen overnight, right? And so part of this is figuring out being solution-oriented and actually putting programs in place that people are committed to and they're committed to finding solutions to. Charlottesville is one of the wealthiest cities in the country. We have the resources. You know, so that's not even a conversation I'm going to toy around with here. We have it,
yes.
And nobody's going to tell me differently.
Right.
Now, they may not want to spend it on what we need to spend it on, but we do have it. So mm-hmm. we're going to leave that part of the conversation off the table. That's already settled. And what do we need to do? And I'm sure I mean, the way Fredericksburg is growing, I don't know what your numbers and, you know, disparities and stuff look like. I'm pretty sure they are, you know, kind of similar. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure the money is there.
Yes.
I have some family members that live in that area, and I'm sure the resources is there that if they are only solution-oriented people at the table, that it can be resolved.
You're absolutely right. And we are, there is a large group of people here and in cities all across the nation, obviously, looking for change, eager for change, wanting to have these honest conversations. And you are one of those people, Dakai, and we appreciate that so much. I can't wait to see you guys again in Charlottesville sometime soon. Charlottesville Mayor Nakia Walker, my guest to kick off season 2. Our hearts are with you, Charlottesville. And Nakia, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed by the host and guests on this podcast are their own and not necessarily those of Centennial Broadcasting.